back. WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I got my mask out. We have been trying to safely do this. I've been elbow bumping. I did shake Warren Moon's hand. He sat down next to me and went in.
Yep.
And I'm not going to not shake Warren Moon's hand.
Hall of Famer.
Well, that's my dude. You know what I mean? So Eric Fisher is here. He is from Sports Business Journal, formerly, now Onward and Upward. And I'll be honest with you. I think of you as baseball. But your company covers, like, not just America. You cover the whole world of sports, right?
Yes. Sport Business. We are the global voice of the sports industry. And so this being the biggest event in all of American sports, it is my professional duty to be here.
Well, you and I have gone up and down the river in many, many capacities. I don't know if you've ever sat on a set with me. You've now been Zooming, and we've gotten to know each other through all these years, and I guess Manfred getting commissionerized about 50 feet away from my house at the Baltimore Hyatt many years ago. The baseball thing, as we sit here in a football environment, and I haven't talked baseball all week. I'm trying to think if I've even mentioned baseball all week, other than texting with Jack Del Rio about baseball earlier. Baseball just seems to be, like, not getting it, and I think the NFL does a lot wrong, and we could certainly go through all that's going on in Washington and Snyder, which we do. But baseball right now doesn't have anything. I mean, and then the Orioles specifically are at the bottom of the bottom of the bottom of something not having anything. And I don't know how they overcome this over the next 2, 4, 6 years as we hopefully come out of a plague and hopefully find a lust for getting outside and on a summer night and having a beer and watching a ball game, right?
100%. And this is just yet another indication of why a work stoppage in 2022, this deep into the 21st century, it's just so bad for the sport. It's bad for any sport, but this sport in particular, when there is now, you sort of compare to where we are now versus 1994, 95, the last big work stoppage. No, you know, internet was just getting going, no social media, no esports. You know, there's all these other competing forces for fans' time and attention and dollars and energy and so forth, and particularly young fans. And if there's no baseball, you know, they're not going to sit around and wait for baseball. They'll go on to something else.
Well, and what's being done up in New York about this? I mean, this is what you cover. I mean, there's nobody that does this better than you do. From the beginning, all of you in this world who cover baseball at that level that I once did 30 years ago, all my Lords of the Realm people that cover how the sausage is made, predicted this and said that it's more acrimonious than it's ever been. And I remember when Messina and Jim Poole were sitting around as player reps and the original strike happened. I shouldn't say the original. The original was 81. The original of that was in the 70s. But the one we would remember as life-altering in the 90s after Camden Yards opened.
Losing a World Series,
Losing a World Series, sure. So when I go back to that period of time, I think about, I was around players. I was around Donald Fehr. I was around angry fans at Camden Yards who had season tickets and felt like it was their birthright to go to a baseball game and for Cal Ripken to get after this streak and all that. I mean, I smell none of that, right? You know what I mean? Like, this is the strike that, well, you're on strike and nobody cares. Kind of like hockey had one of those, you know, where they lost a year. And it's like the hockey people care, but they moved on too, right?
Well,
just move on.
Again, it's a busy world out there. Like I said, there's a lot of competing forces, for entertainment time and dollars. And, you know, out of sight, out of mind, you know, you're just going to end up with a shrinking pie. And that's, you sort of combine that with then what's happening with sort of the ongoing implosion of the regional sports media model. You know, baseball's in a tough spot right now. So as we're sitting here talking, they just finished up an owners meeting. They sort of huddled. The union huddled separately. They're going to have another bargaining session the day before the Super Bowl. We'll see what comes of it. There's still, Manfred publicly is trying to express hope that spring training will not be delayed, postponed, what have you, but it seems almost inevitable.
It's farcical at this point.
100%. 100%. Yeah, that, you know, we're a week away from pitchers and catchers.
Sometimes I don't know whether they're just farcical, gaslighting, full of shit. I don't know where
all the above.
I don't know what, like, who are you fooling the truth is the truth is the truth here. And I don't want to offend you as a lawyer, but it's really about lawyers versus lawyers. This has nothing to do with anything other than lawyers battling over the money that these factions want, and there's plenty of money.
Well, I think there's even something deeper at play here, and there's an attitudinal issue from where I see it, that there is at least a certain contingent of ownership that sort of sees the players as just employees, people on the payroll, high-paid people on the payroll, but just people on the payroll as opposed to the actual product. You know, what we actually want to see are the players, because they can do things in terms of hitting major league pitching. You know, there's only like 100 people on the planet who actually can like do this at a really proficient level. That's what we want to see. It goes beyond just being on the payroll. The players are the product. Yes, the owners are taking, they assume the financial risk and they have a role to play as well. But until all of ownership really takes that sort of philosophical step and really sees the players as the product and then tries to strike partnership within that context, we're going to have a hard time getting there.
Well, this has been handed down from generation. This is literally a Hatfields and McCoys. This is literally the Middle East.
It's the original sin.
Yeah. I mean, these people have been fighting since Kurt Flood, really, and there was no fight before then. Oh, it was fiefdom at that point.
Oh, right? Yeah, but if you go back to newspapers from, like, the 1910s, the 1900-whatevers, you know, 100-plus years ago, this philosophical thing that I'm describing is still there, that they sort of see just guys on the payroll and not the actual product. Nothing has changed in 120 years.
Eric Fisher's here. He is Sport Business, and you can find him out on the internet. You can find him through my Twitter or anywhere where you've been my Masson buddy all these years.
Yes.
And, you know, at some point, something's going to happen. You know what I mean? Like, and I guess there's no greater example, and I guess to bring you into this, because I don't want to get down the river with Peter and the Orioles, although I will. But we're here in L.A., right?
Yes.
And I see Matthew Stafford up here, Joe Burrow. And I'm getting old, man. It's my 31st year, 28th Super Bowl. And I remember the San Diego Super Bowls and the threats made by Tagliabue that you're not going to get a game here if you don't get a stadium. And they had no problem moving a team out of town. They had no problem taking Julio's Raiders out of Oakland and plopping them down. I had Howard Balzer here. They had no problem stealing the team the first time. I saw Vince Ferragamo at a football game the other night, and then bringing them, hauling them back here again. And this is the wet dream of wet dreams of wet dreams. Like, if 10 years ago you could have orchestrated how this was going to go down. We're going to build a stadium. We're going to have our rich owner move a team there. We're going to pop another team down and hold them ransom and move them to Germany or London or Mexico City, whatever we're going to do with that in the meantime. We're going to have a Super Bowl in L.A. We're going to have the Rams there. We're going to have it in, and we're going to have a quarterback who number one versus number one overall pick. This is, no matter how, they fall forward, man. They really, really do. And we talk about baseball. We're in L.A., Dodgers, Angels, Mike Trout, best player, most interesting player, most interesting man on earth, plays for the Angels now, right? Two of the most interesting men on earth, and the most interesting man on earth managing them. This is fertile baseball territory, all the way down to Manny Machado in San Diego.
Yep.
And here comes the NFL in saying, nah, we're going to be the ones going after the Lakers here. You know, we're,
right.
And it's obvious what the league did here in L.A., but you have witnessed it from when this was not even an embryo. When Lee Steinberg was sitting over here, was trying to play with the Rose Bowl, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do Throw Us a Thousand Oaks, and we're going to do Carson. It is amazing that they pulled this off pretty much the friggin' way they wanted to.
Oh, 100%. And then just wait until the new Clippers own arena opens, which is going to be yet another showpiece that's going to sort of...
Where's that?
That's going to be right at Inglewood, the Intuit Dome. It's going to be right next to SoFi Stadium.
See, I need to learn. I don't know. They didn't build anything here for 100 years.
It's all changing.
Literally. I watched them play NFL football at a community college soccer stadium here for
you. You look at what's going on here, and then you also think about what's going on in Las Vegas with the new Raiders stadium and the new arena, potentially the A's moving there. They're getting lacrosse. They're getting all, you know, basically the whole...
They have lacrosse in California?
In Las Vegas.
Wow.
Yeah, Joe Tsai, the owner of the Nets, he's involved in that whole
situation. I remember when lacrosse was just something the kids in Roland Park did. You know what I mean?
No, it's literally a big-time professional thing. But like, my point is that you look at what's happening in L.A. and you look at what's happening in Las Vegas, the whole sort of gravitational pull of the entire American sports industry is tilted west. All the heat right now is here in L.A., and it's in Vegas.
Because people love it here. Right? Listen, you and I grew up East Coast, right?
Right.
Give everybody your background, because you worked at the Washington Times, you chased Angelos around when the Nationals were a glimmer in Daddy's
right.
eye,
yes.
and then they become, you know, a world champion, and they sell more tickets, and all of the worst fears when you took that beat 20 years ago in Washington.
Right.
But our backgrounds, as old white guys, and I'll put myself in that category, but even though I'm Hispanic when I need to be, I dress Hispanic. My hair is Hispanic. The baseball side of this, I guess all these years ago, was that it was the king of the hill. It was sort of unquestioned to any degree that it was ever going to change. And we've watched this thing sort of devolve from a baseball perspective. Dude, you're talking about lacrosse, and I'm sitting in Southern California.
Right.
I promise you, when I sat in San Diego in 1998 and broadcasted from Radio Row there, the notion that the industry of lacrosse could catch on, or that these other sports could come in and take time.
I'll go several steps further here. So when I was in Vegas for the Consumer Electronics Show last month, I went to a drone race. I don't know if you've heard anything about this. Like, they race drones.
Is that like High Line?
It's a big deal, and they've got, like, serious money behind it, including Stephen Ross, the owner of the Dolphins. But they had a drone race there out in the plaza in front of the arena where the Knights play, the hockey team. And they had several thousand people there, a lot of heat, a lot of energy. And I was one of the oldest people there, real young crowd, sort of like the kind of folks who you would see at a UFC or a NASCAR event, and lots of energy there. And again, this is what I'm talking about, where like baseball and some of these older sports are in real trouble. And if you're not playing something sort of exciting and visceral and tech forward, like drone racing, they're going to capture young people.
I'm going to get into the metaverse with Eric Fisher here before it's all over.
Yeah.
I guess what on the East, being East Coast people and being white guys, it was provincial. It was my neighborhood turf was either Yankees or Mets or even Dodgers or Giants back a generation before you. For us, it was Orioles, and I guess there was a Senators thing at some point, but it was about I love Baltimore, I love my town, Brooks Robinson's my guy, Johnny U represents Baltimore. There was a provincial way I was taught sports that I don't know that when a team plops down in Vegas, and look, I was at those Stanley Cup Finals games with Trotz and the Capitals winning and all of that. They plopped down, and I still have the towel. I still use it to wipe my counters. And it said, we are all misfits. There was a whole local branding effort about Las Vegas miscreants who might have been a Red Wings fan or a Blackhawks fan, that you now live in Vegas, your kids are in school in Vegas, you're working in Vegas, you can be a fan of this new thing, right?
Something
that's new. The Rams are new, they're old, I don't know what the hell the Chargers are, you know,
right.
but setting down a brand, they didn't want to put the Raiders brand here, ever, and they didn't want to put Davis here, right?
Right.
But in these places, when you say the future's West and Vegas in these places, is there a sense of identity, community, latching on, winning that they see as fundamental to why I'm from L.A., I love the Rams? Because there's none of that going on here. I don't even know if they understand what that means to grow up in Baltimore and to feel that pull toward the Orioles because they're my team. You know, I don't know that that's even what they're selling. They're certainly not selling that with the Raiders in Vegas. The Raiders are an international black and silver Death Star that anybody is welcome to join.
And that's
in
what the stadium looks like.
But it's a whole different thing than saying we're from the little town of Kenosha and we love the Packers.
Yeah, you're talking about an entirely different notion of fandom, where it was very geographic and very familial, that, you know, your elders pass it down to you and you pass it down to the next generation. It's totally different now.
Where we're into wrestlers and NASCARs and humans, right? They root for people, right?
Yeah. It's about latching onto a personality and a fan sort of creating their own experience and having it be either at an event or outside an event, whatever they want it to be. So the notions of fandom are now so fluid that what you're talking about was a much more static model of fandom, and now what is emerging is something much more fluid.
Hard to understand that. I mean, like, as older dudes who covered it one way, that read the sports page, contributed to the sports page, grew up wanting to write.
Poured over the box scores.
Yeah, I mean, I was the agate clerk for 6.5 years at the Baltimore Evening Sun. I mean, I put the stats together and the money leaders and, like, the loop leaders. There, I'll give you an old term there, right? So that's all gone. It's disintegrated. Yeah. And I think baseball still thinks that my dad's coming back and we're going to buy the Sporting News and have loop leaders again. And if not, why are they? How are they getting onto the field? Like, what's going to be the middle point that is going to bring them back on May 14th to start the season the way they did 30 years ago? You know, like.
Well, I think what you're going to sort of end up with is a classic compromise deal that nobody's happy with, and maybe not for 5 years or 4 years like a traditional deal. Maybe it's only for two, where they just essentially, okay, we got to stop the bleeding. Let's, like, do some sort of provisional deal and then kick the can down the road and have nuclear war again in 2 years kind of thing, or 3 years. I could see something like that happen.
It feels performative to me. Like, it's just...
A little bit, yeah.
You know, it's... We want arbitration. Well, we're not going to stand for that. And Scherzer's going to tweet, and then you know, back and forth. It is very performative, and I keep thinking to myself, at some point, if you guys are going to play, and no one likes compromise in this country, we learned that with the elections, right?
Oh, God.
Like, losing's not only unacceptable, you just scream that you've been cheated, that you've been frauded, you know? And both sides here, the lose would be not getting everything they want. Neither side's going to get everything they want. So at some point you'd think they would realize we're here playing football, they're over there playing basketball, you're over here bringing lacrosse and all this, that they would say, yeah, we've been fighting for the last 6 months. We may want to open spring training March 10th.
Yeah, but because, again, they're arguing over a shrinking pie, because really what fundamentally needs to happen, as we've been discussing, is they've got to figure out a way to go be brothers in arms and figure out how they're going to grow the pie in this highly competitive entertainment landscape that they are now facing tough obstacles in.
Hey, you know, I hate to pigeonhole you in the bit, because we could sit here and talk about all sorts of things that you covered sport business. By the way, Eric Fisher's here on set. Love having him around. You've heard him for many, many years on the Masson things and, like, all of that crap. For baseball, what are they really... What's the real great? Do they, when you sit in these meetings, like, I come here this week, and you could talk about Goodell outside and beating him up about any number of things, but they got a strategy, dude. They're going to Germany. They're going to London. They're going to fix this Charger problem. They're going to fix the Buffalo problem. They're going to fix the Jacksonville problem. Or they're going to just stick it up the backsides of these people like they did to the San Diego folks.
And
over
some
here.
Of those aren't even really problems. I mean, like Buffalo, as you say, for example, that one, it's going to get resolved, and it's going to continue to be the high-performing, outperforming market that it has been. That's not even really a problem. I mean, yes, the stadium needs to be replaced, but it's a great NFL market, and it's going to continue to be a great NFL market. Nothing is really bad there.
Okay, but the money to build the stadium, you always figure that out, right?
Right, but again,
they didn't
that's
figure it out in San Diego. They didn't figure it out in Oakland, you know? Right?
Well, San Diego, not as good a market. You know, Buffalo's worth saving. San Diego, not nearly as strong performing NFL market.
You think Buffalo's worth saving?
Oh, 100%.
You think Goodell, I mean, you think the 32 guys in the league would go in the room and think that market as a place to sell tickets, not just straight population?
Here's the metric you look at this. When the Super Bowl numbers come out here after the game on Sunday,
82%.
No, but, like, you will have the competing markets. That Cincinnati will probably be the number one local market rating. LA will be right there as well. Buffalo will be a top five market. And this happens in hockey as well, that they will watch national events because it's a great hockey market and a great football market. They will watch major championship events in those sports, even when their teams are not there, in a very disproportionate way.
Well, I guess for the future of all this, these are the leaders, right? Everybody follows what these folks here do. And I talk about growth and strategy and where they're going and all that. Then there's the other side, and there's the Orioles. Is there anything, I mean, we sit next to each other, we half joke about it. I mean, We talk about the global problem of just getting them on the field. Then what happens when they show up? What happens when they start playing on May 10th or whenever, maybe on time, who knows, right? Time will tell. Come back and watch the video 60 days from now. But once they start playing, what are the Orioles going to do?
Well, we don't know, and I will, at the risk of sounding repetitive, what I keep asking for and waiting for is some sign of life. What is the plan? And I think about, you know, whether you like what the Cubs did or what the Astros did and breaking it down and building it back up and whether tanking, you know, you can have all those sort of debates. But the point, particularly with the Cubs, but also the Astros, they went to every chamber of commerce. They went to every Kiwanis club, the opening of a door to make it, you know, be flip about it, to let everybody know this is our plan. Please follow us along. Come for the ride. There are better days ahead. And for both of those franchises, there were better days that ultimately arrived. And what I would like to see, whoever it is from the, whether it's John or somebody else, somebody get out and say, this is our vision. It may take 3 years, it may take 5 years, it may, whatever it is, but here is our vision. Please come with us for the ride. And I am seeing none of that.
Where's the responsibility with the commissioner's office? And I know, my God, they've got 10 pots frying. And it's almost like a Bugs Bunny video, right? But their, I don't know, culpability, responsibility to say, how bad are we going to let this get? Because, you know, when Peter was swinging at them and suing them, and you and I have been down that river for a dozen years talking about it, and when he was alive and not eating pudding, there was always this fear of, ooh, Peter, you know, like we don't want to anger Peter more than we've already angered Peter because he might be vindictive. There's none of that anymore. Now there should be a global thought to, how are we going to fix this, man? And let's send a fixer down there. The old days, Roselle would have had a fixer. You know, they would have said, we're going to send somebody from the league office down there and clean that up and get that franchise back where it needs to be.
We need good old-fashioned peer pressure.
Well, they're trying to do that with the Washington football team, right? I mean, a little bit of that,
right?
Sanitize it somehow.
But you think about, like, the corollary in the NFL, you know, there was a very famous owners meeting 5, 6, 7 years ago, I'm forgetting the timeline, where Jerry Jones basically getting in Mike Brown's grill, like, what, you know, like, you don't sell naming rights to your stadium, you don't do X and Y and Z, you look at what we're doing, and obviously the Cowboys have done very, very aggressive building their brand, and they really sort of took the Bengals and other teams at that time at the lower end of the league to task for not working,
dragging down the big number.
100%.
Right.
So basically, good old-fashioned schoolyard peer pressure, and now here we are, the Bengals are in this game, and the Cowboys are nowhere to be seen.
Well, this was part of Finley and Steinbrenner when we were kids, stepping out on the front end, not only making themselves loudmouth celebrities and whatnot, but setting a standard that there is somebody around here. George, the boss is here, and the boss wants to win. As bad as you want to win over in Brooklyn and over in Staten Island. There was a little bit of that professional wrestler, Albano. You know, the little manager. We're going to come and take the championship. We're going to win. And and that was a little bit of the piss and vinegar after the Lakers would win, that the Jerry buses and the owners would stand up and drink their champagne and smoke their cigars and get the parade around town and say, we're a champion. I don't know what the next ownership of the Ravens is going to be, and we could talk about the ownership there and Dick Cass, and that's moved, and that's, it's an amazing thing, but
But just to complete the point, none of that is happening in baseball, where nobody is taking the Angeloses or Bob Nutting or pick your owner to task and say, where are you? What are you doing? And what I would like to
be for the fans performative to winning, but the real thing here isn't necessarily winning. We can all share in that. The thing here is, let's grow the big pie. And that's the thing fans, I don't think, relate to as much, that when you peel back the sausage and say the owners do get on the other owners, that makes sense. That makes all the sense in the world when you see them lagging behind. And that's why it hasn't made sense to me that New York's watched this thing deteriorate for the last 15 years.
Well, Hal's a very different person than his father. And then the Mets situation, that would be another one where, you know, you had the Wilpons for a number of years, and now Steve Cohen owns the Mets. The first year was very bumpy, had a lot of internal issues. He can't really flex on the other teams when he had to work so hard just to get his own house in order, you know, and basically going through three general managers because they couldn't do a, you know, vetting process and all. You know, his house now seems to be getting in order, and maybe he will flex a little bit more. You know, Dodgers, that could be another one where they should be sort of flexing a little bit more on the owner. Like, come on, you know, you got to try.
Well, listen, when I talk to the Boston people, when I'm talking Bob Ryan, Dan Shaughnessy, they do the show frequently.
Yeah.
They tell me that most days the Red Sox wake up number three in the market, in the Boston market, the Red Sox. So if the Red Sox aren't leaders and the Yankees aren't leaders and the Cubs aren't leaders, I guess, you know, the Braves have been leaders in how to make money. You know, go to the county, build a stadium, build a mall around it, and win a championship, right?
See, that's another real interesting thing, because Tom Brady was so successful and so amazing that you look at what the Red Sox did. Like, they broke the curse, saved Fenway Park, won four titles. I think they've been a model franchise in a lot of it. Like, you should feel pretty good. Like, if, compared to when we were kids, things are really good with the Red Sox. But, like, it's almost they became numb to it because, like, all of what I just described still topped by the Patriots, because the Patriots, you know, they won six Super Bowl, you know, it's like, or set, you know.
However many.
Yeah.
Sat here. I
lose count.
I lost fingers. But, Aaron Fisher's here. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, but that's my point. Like, you know, there really should be nothing to complain about but the Red Sox. I think that, you know, they give a ton of money to charity. I think the last 20 years of the Red Sox, yes, you got beer and chicken and some other minor incidents, but you look at the totality of what that Werner Henry group has done, it's amazing. But again, you pull that up against what Bob Kraft and the Patriots have done, it's a different story.
Eric's here to talk all things sport business. You can find him out on the internet, and he has been a frequent contributor to us, a frequent contributor in all things lawyerly, massonly, and it's still never nickel exchange and all that. All the breath we've given this in 15 years,
yes,
Peter still never paid the bill.
No. Keep kicking the can down the road.
Oh, man, at some point it'll all come to. It's good to see you, man. Happy
absolutely.
L.A. to you.
Yes, absolutely.
And we'll get back to the East Coast with proper milkshakes and baseball at some point. We're in L.A. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. Masked up. We're letting ourselves play. We're going to have the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back on the road beginning March 4th. At Mama's on the Half Shell down in Canton. Big thanks to our friends at Wise Markets for the Wise Conversations. And by the way, mocha on special right now at Royal Farms. Real fresh, real fast. Get out and drink some of that coffee. We do appreciate them sending us out here to L.A. I'm Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore. Positive.